Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Thursday evening edition of Head On. I am Bob. Welcome to the Malloy listeners listening after Malloy's live show to this repeat broadcast. Welcome to the crew. Welcome to the gang in the chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Welcome to those of you who listen via podcast, via the various and sundry streams that go out all around the globe. Welcome. I got a sensation we're going to have a busy night tonight. I mean, I could be crazy and everything. It wouldn't be the first time. But I think we're going to be busy. Why do I say that? Well, first of all, coming up in about, 28 minutes or so, I expect that we will be having a wonderful conversation with Mary Rickles. Mary is the communications director for Netroots Nation. And I think you will be amazed to hear what all has gone into preparing for this, the single largest gathering of the liberal progressive blogosphere of this year, as it is in any year. This year taking place in Pittsburgh, and it's quite exciting. A heck of a lineup going on. Netrootsnation.org is the web address if you want to go by and have a look. So that'll be coming your way in about 28 minutes or so. But I think we've solved a little mystery. This is how we'll get started. I think we have solved a little mystery. Those of us watching the glacial pace of the debate over health care reform in this country have wondered on this program, have wondered on blogs, have wondered in quiet conversations around the dinner table and in line at the grocery store while pumping gas or waiting to buy stamps at the post office, we have wondered, what's taking so darn long? I think we have the answer. At once upon a time, in the days of the oldie Roman Republic, so I was told, a public official convicted of accepting bribes would be thrown in a burlap sack with a wolf, have the top tied off, and he and the wolf would then be tossed in the Tiber. Now, we don't do that anymore. Frankly, you wouldn't want to pollute the Potomac any more than it already is by throwing a politician in it. I'm not so worried about the wolf. A little article out today from Roll Call. You know, the congressional newspaper. Talking about the frustration that is being felt by a number of Democrats in the United States Senate at the sort of double-secret probation, thank you, sir, may I have another way that Finance Chairman Max Baucus, Democrat of, well, you know, you use the term loosely, of Montana, the way that he's dealing with health care reform. Now, I'm still baffled as to why the Finance Committee would have jurisdiction over the well-being of the people of the United States. I'm sure it could be explained one way or another. Anyway, the pace has been glacial as Senator Baucus played footsie with people like Charles Grassley of Iowa. And the Repiglicans on that committee. Glacial. I think that's a good... really slowly. And, you know, the way that he shut people advocating for single-payer health care, the real answer to the health care crisis in this country, the way he shut them just, no, you're not here. I can't see you. Where are you? No, there's no one here wanting single-payer. I think we have the answer. And we have it courtesy of Open Left, who did a little digging around, looking at the years from 2005 to now. And they found, well, you know, chercher l'argent. They found some money. Apparently, Max Baucus has been practically drowning in money. So, he's so surrounded by these humongous piles of cash that he can't move any. That's why he can't move any faster. The money is impeding his progress. When you got money stacked around you 15 feet high, it's kind of hard to wade through. What do I mean? Oh, let's look at Senator Baucus's top 10 donors. And where they come from. Number 10. Where's Paul Schaefer when you need him? Hell, where's Little Drummer Ferg when you need him? Number 10. DaVita, Inc. DaVita, Inc. Why, they're number 10 on the list, and they only gave Max Baucus $47,850. What's DaVita Incorporated's racket? Why, look, everybody, it's health care! Number 9, Goldman Sachs. They only gave Max Baucus a paltry $47,900. Now, we all know Goldman Sachs is in the financial services industry, right? But Goldman Sachs being in the financial services industry and being an investment bank and yada, 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 and they probably loan some money to some giant healthcare corporations along the way, wouldn't you guess? I mean, I'm just saying. Number 8. Aetna, Inc. They gave $51,250 to Senator Max Baucus between 2005 and the present. They are, of course, Aetna, Inc. in the health insurance business. Oh, and then number 7, some old friends of ours, a name you will easily recognize, American International Group. Most usually recognized by their initials, AIG. Between 2005 and the present, they gave to Senator Max Baucus the pocket jingle, $51,750. Oh, and look, there's another old friend at number 6, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company. Banking and insurance. They gave Senator Baucus $58,100. Oh, and for the life you lead, Senator Baucus, there's always New York Life. Gosh, they co-opted little Snoopy and put him on a blimp, and it's so cute, and it just makes you feel all warm and fuzzy. Well, they make Senator Max Baucus feel fuzzy, too. Between 2005 and the present, New York Life has made, and they're in the life and health insurance business, by the way. Now, I wouldn't want to let that slip past. Senator Baucus feel fuzzy to the... I feel pretty fuzzy, too, at $59,150. So we've got financial services industry and health insurance and banking all there between number 10 and number 5. Number 4, however, is... you might say that they're a bit of an anomaly, although not really when you think about it. UST, Inc., why, they gave Senator Baucus $61,950. They're in the chewing tobacco and booze business. And you think, well, that's not health care, Bob. No, no, but it's the abuse of it that leads to the need for it, and the need for it leads the health insurance industry to say, look, we got a lot of these people using these products. Well, we need to jack up the rates. Yeah. $61,950 over the course of 4 years, I would surmise might very well purchase a lifetime supply of, I don't know, Skoll, Copenhagen, little pinch between your cheek, a little pinch between your wallet and butt lasts a long time. Number three, Blue Cross Blue Shield. Looking out for America. Gosh, it just gets you all, makes you just feel like you've got a warm sweater on a cold winter night, the way Blue Cross Blue Shield envelops us with its avaricious care models. $62,350 worth of love went to Senator Max Baucus from Blue Cross Blue Shield in the last 4 years. Number two, Amgen Inc. And you all know what they do. They're in the biotechnology business. They called Senator Baucus's office and said, put us down for $65,250 over the next 4 years. How about it, guys? And then at the top of the heap, both literally and figuratively, those darlings who have received so much of the largesse of the wealth and well-being of the people of the United States of America, Sharing Plow Corp. No, they don't make plows. That's P-L-O-U-G-H, plow, Sharing Plow Corp. Of the princely pharmaceutical industry. You know, there's a big drop-off between number one and number two on this list. Amgen was only good for $62,250 over the last 4 years. But hey, Sharing Plow Corp has been good for $86,200. Almost 20, well, it, what is that, $20,950 better than Skinflint Amgen. Has anybody been doing this math on the fly? Because I'm seeing 140, 190, 190, 250, 305, 365, 425. Do I hear? I got 425, 425, 425. I got 425, 425 from Blue Cross Blue Shield. 425, 425. Can I hear? 490. 490 from Amgen. 490, 490, 490. 490 going once. 490 going. Oh, my goodness. $574,000. Is the final bid. The final tally coming through is Sharing Plow Corp. You know, fella could have a pretty good time in Vegas on that kind of money. All he needs now is the official U.S. military miniature Holy Bible and Russian translation book, two pairs of nylon stockings, four bars of chocolate. Yeah. Any questions? I mean, really, any questions? The best government money can buy. No, 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 let's amend that. The best money, the best government corporate money can buy. And with friends like Max Baucus, I don't know why idiots like Jim Inhofe, who looks like a turtle on a bender. I don't know why Senator Jim Inhofe finds it necessary to crow about the Republicans beating a health care plan. The Democrats are going to be beaten by one of their own in the form of Max Baucus. But that never stopped Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma from running his loopy, insane, addled-pated mouth. Oh, no, 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 no. Do you know who Janet Parshall is? Janet Parshall is one of these weirdo, right-wing, evangelical, fundamentalist, phony baloney, wouldn't comprehend Christ if she met him in the street, Christians, who gets paid a boatload of money to broadcast. And what she broadcasts is right-wing hate. I think it was Janet Parshall that, wasn't it Janet Parshall a couple of years ago that Randy Rhodes just peeled like a grape? Yeah. That Janet Parshall. So Inhofe appears on Janet Parshall's program yesterday and explains what the Republican strategy is. Here it is. Someday. Maybe.
All right, well, you talked about CBO. That leads me to your input on what in the world's going on with health care.
Well,
why is this being pushed so fast and so hard by the president? What's he trying to do here?
I've never seen a time in the history of this country.
Well, there's talking point number one, isn't it? Oh, he's pushing health care so hard and so fast. Little memo to Janet Parshall. When you're broadcasting to a bunch of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, evangelical fundamentalists, don't talk about things being done hard and fast, okay? Some little child could wind up getting hurt.
In that I've been around, that where there are so many issues where the Republicans are on the people's side, whether it's cap and trade, whether it's the closing of Gitmo, you know, this president is...
Wait. Closing Gitmo and cap and trade and the Repiglickens are on the people's side? Oh, somebody's been massaging that message for a while.
Just had an obsession about sending those terrorists to into the United States. And then health care. You know, we went through this thing in 1993 with Hillary health care, and surely he should remember that. And that started the demise of Bill Clinton that led to the 1994 Republican takeover of the House and the Senate. Well, surely Obama is watching that and realizing that the popularity or unpopularity of his socialized medicine exceeds...
Ow! Socialized medicine, my left hind foot. Don't! There is not a bit of socialized medicine in any of the proposals coming down. If you want to talk about socialized medicine, Senator Inhofe, Janet Parshall, then you're also talking about universal single-payer health care. You know, the solution to the problem. But that solution is not on the table. In fact, I read an article, Sandra sent it to me last night, I read an article that just made my eyes bug out, like, you know, like when you see that Tony Perkins is walking into the Bates Motel. When Medicare was passed, from the moment that the Medicare Act was signed into law until coverage was achieved, it took 11 months. Under the plan being espoused by President Barack Obama, we don't get coverage under whatever, even if he gets his way, and the Democrats manage to find a lonely and ignored little spine out there and use it, even if all of that happens, you know, picture perfect, we don't get coverage until after the next presidential election in 2012. No kidding. It's mind-blowing. Whatever happened to American exceptionalism? It boggles my mind. Blows me away. 2013? Really? 2013? I don't understand why. This report came from Black Agenda Report, blackagendareport.com. Article by Bruce Dixon, is the Obama health care plan really better than nothing? And that's where those numbers, the real Obama plan doesn't cover the uninsured until 2013, if then. And as Bruce Dixon notes, 1967, not many computers, no internet, communications taking place at a decidedly slower pace, and still, boom, 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 Medicare signed into law, full coverage, 11 months. Now in this cybernetic era of instantaneous communication, it's going to take till 2013, if then. Something stinks.
Where Hillary Healthcare was in 1993. So you ask me a question I can't answer. What's wrong with them? They ought to know. They ought to know from history that this is a losing proposition for them. And for those out there who believe that would like to have something optimistic to look at, we are plotting the demise on a week-by-week basis of where Bill Clinton was in 1993 and where Obama is today. And his demise ratio is greater than Clinton's was in 1993.
So, oh, congratulations. Today's installment of Eliminationist Rhetoric, the award goes to Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. Plotting, he said it. He said, we are plotting Obama's demise. Have you ordered a rifle from a Wisconsin gun store yet, Senator Inhofe? I mean, we are plotting his demise ratio? I keep telling you. They're killers.
So he's trying to do the same things, except more extreme. I can remember in 1993, I was down on the floor complaining about a $1.5 trillion budget. This is a $3.5 trillion budget.
Oh, oh.
So I've never seen.
What's he doing to you, Janet Parshall?
Anything like it, where we've been handed so many things to use. Now we want to use them, do it right, and then let all these people who want to expand the size of the tent, remember what happened to the Republican Party back at that time.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears. Could not agree more.
From your mouth to God's ears. They actually talk that way. Yeah, did you hear him, God? You're supposed to come down and smite that one. Get your smiting lightning bolt out, God. From Jim Inhofe's mouth to your ear. Because that fascist fundamentalist, Janet Parshall, said so. And even assuming that the Democrats find that lonely little spine, Inhofe says they've got the votes to stop any kind of reform that might afford meaningful health care, assuming that the Democratic plan winds up doing that, that affords meaningful health care to working and middle class and poor Americans who desperately need it. At least that's what he told that right-wing banana brain Hugh Hewitt.
Okay, so they need 60 votes, and that means you just got to pick up a couple of Democrats, and the Republicans have to stay strong. Do you think that you have that number to block health care, radical stuff in the Senate?
Oh, I think so. I really do. In fact, there'll be a lot of Democrats. You know, I liken it to the cap and trade thing. Now, that's the one that I've been kind of in charge of for 10 years, and we know where we are on that now. We know that if as long as people keep talking the way they are right now, we're going to defeat it. They only have 34 votes. They need 60 votes. I'd say health care right now is somewhere in the neighborhood of they have maybe 45 votes. But every day they lose votes because people find out what it is, what it's going to do, and what it's not going to do. When you tell people that the mortality rate in Canada is 25% higher for breast cancer, 18% higher for prostate cancer, you know, they say, why in the world would we emulate a system like that? This is.
Yeah, when you tell them that. Of course, if you're lying, you're not going to tell them that you're lying, that you're just making numbers up. Yeah. He went on to say that when the GOP says they want to slow down health care reform, what they mean is they want to kill health care reform. Because, see, Senator Inhofe is very happy having the best socialized medicine that money can buy and the world can offer. And he likes it a lot. He likes it so much that he doesn't want to share it with you, me, or anyone else on this planet.
merciful.
Let's wedge in a quick phone call before I have to get Mary Rickles on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Well, I had a few things. Let me get on some other subjects, if you don't mind, because I know you're going to go back to health care. But I've been noticing today they're really pushing this thing. Apparently, Time's come out with a story about Scooter Libby and his pardon, why he didn't get one. You know, apparently, they're doing some story on the last days of the Bush-Cheney administration.
Is this where they all start smoking in the bunker? Oh, dictator.
Wrong dictator, yeah. Now, this is the one where they're saying, why did he just commute his sentence and why didn't he pardon him? Well, I recently, once a month, I have to go out and drive for like 3 or 4 days in my job, and I've got some books on CD now that I've been listening to. And last one I was listening to was Fair Game by Valerie Plame Wilson. And they bring this up at the end of the book, and they remind you of this, just, and I haven't seen anybody in the news bother to mention this, that if Bush commutes his sentence, that's fine. But the minute Bush pardons Scooter Libby's sentence, he gets subpoenaed before a Senate committee. And when he sits before that Senate committee, the words Fifth Amendment disappear from his vocabulary.
That is very true.
Because he can't claim, you know, that he'd incriminate himself because he's been pardoned.
Yeah, he's got the golden ticket get out of jail free card.
So that in my opinion is why he was never pardoned. Because the minute he's pardoned, he's sitting before a Senate committee. And they're asking him who told him and what day.
It ain't
none of this, oh, Tim Russert told me.
But Luke, to be fair, I mean under ordinary circumstances that is exactly how it would work. But who would have subpoenaed him?
Well, at that point, if you got a Henry Waxman would have.
Well, that's possible, yeah.
It'd have been a House committee, but he'd have put him sitting there front and center and said, we're going to have a little talk.
Well, and it would be fine for it to be a House committee because that would have been where impeachment started in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to hit 2-3 quick subjects because I know you got to go to your guest. I got to give credit to a saying I heard last night from Chris Matthews. Do you know what this whole birther issues comes down to?
Racism?
It's a matter of pigmentation rather than documentation.
Oh, that is good.
Because he was sitting there going, you know, said, nobody ever brought this up with George Bush. He said, look, if it had been us in 2001, 2000, we could have really pushed the issue, the fact that they weren't legal because both of them were from Texas.
Yes.
I don't care what they say. Dick Cheney owned a house in Wyoming, but Dick Cheney had lived in Texas for like 10 years. And everybody knew it, and they just assigned him and said he was from Wyoming. That's where his main residence was, even though apparently he hadn't lived there in 10 years.
Right, and you do a little detective work, and you go up there. When's the last time you saw Dick Cheney? Oh, he lives in Texas.
Yeah. So I mean, but that's the thing on this thing with the birthers. It's amazing. I tell you, the one to watch, and I don't mean to watch it to enjoy it, is just to watch the Lou Dobbs and watch him just twist himself into a pretzel over this.
Well, what gives? He's got a radio show now?
Yeah.
Huh.
He does. I bet 10-1 it's probably sort of like Bill O'Reilly's radio show, you know, a rating of 0.1. It's lucky.
But, I mean, I got to look into it. I mean, has CNN gone into the talk radio business?
No, I don't think it's through CNN per se. I don't know because we don't get even the CNN feed down here anymore. But he's on something, but I don't know what it is.
He's on something all right.
Serious or something like that or what, you know what I mean? I don't know if it's, I assume it's national, but you know what I mean. So. Oh, and one thing on your health care, it's interesting to watch all these groups run these commercials, watch the end of the commercial and see where it says, this was paid for by the pharmaceutical research method, all these things. And then this one where this jackass has been out there for 2 months, you know, it's amazing to me how we don't ever hear anybody in the news mention it. Oh, yeah, this is the guy that was fined, what was it, $1.3 billion for defrauding the health care industry.
Right.
You know, this is a guy that used to be in charge. It was Cigna or UHC or whatever. I can't remember which group it was. But, you know, he was the one that got like over $1 billion fined to him for misleading and falsifying paperwork.
Dummying up the file.
Mm-hmm. But amazingly enough, they never mentioned that when those commercials are run. And they say, we're going to talk about this. Well, we can't tell you who he is. And it's like these other ones where they put these fun names for it. Oh, we're for the for citizens. Until you get looking at it and find out it's either insurance companies or pharmaceutical companies that are paying for it.
Oh, right. It's like this gang that opposes employee free choice. One of the groups is, this certainly sounds the Center for Union Facts. No, it's the Center for Union Libel and Slander.
Yeah.
Because it's a right-wing group that's backed by, oh, what's the freak's name? Rick Berman?
Oh, yeah.
He fronts that outfit.
That's what I mean. It's on some of these things. It'd be interesting if they'd actually bother telling you who's pushing some of this stuff. You know, especially in the pharmaceutical and all this stuff, there's so many of them where they put these nice little ads, like you say, you know, conservatives for people's choice, something like that. It's like it has nothing to do with the people's choice.
Yeah, how about Republicans for screw you, buddy?
Yeah. But, that thing on Baucus was interesting. I say you wish they'd do that for everyone sitting on that committee. You know, they ought to put the whole list of them across the page.
That's only the top 10, though.
But that's what I mean. And the thing is, that probably doesn't even count the people that are giving as individuals.
No, I would imagine so.
And I'm sure if we looked into that, and you know, see where these top individuals, these people maxing out on their, what, $2,000 thing or whatever it is. Let's see how many of these people are listed under these companies that were just in the top 10. But I'm seeing the clock. I see it's the bottom of the hour, and I know you got your guest coming up. Did you see the thing last night with Mr. Helton?
No, I did not.
He hit his 50th double of the year, 500th double.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the top, yeah. Still with the Rockies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's in a, if you look at the list of who he's in with all that, they had the one that was like, was it the 300 home, over 300 home runs, over 500 doubles, and over a .325 batting average career. You got to look at that list. There's like seven people on it. It starts off with Babe Ruth.
Yeah, and that's a pretty elite little club. Yeah.
Yeah, but amazingly enough, if you watch ESPN, you got about 2 minutes of coverage on it because we have to go watch Manny hit a game-ending home run. You know, cleared the bases for.
Amazing how he can do that with all those steroids leaving his system.
But yeah, you know, it's like saying the one interesting. Oh, the other one is we'll talk to you next week. Is if you've been watching anything, it's SEC days.
Oh, and yes, and we will have to talk about that because I got an email from our buddy David in Tennessee today,
okay.
Talking about Coach Nick Saban of Alabama, and
where he had to swear that he had voted for Tebow.
Well, not just that, but the fact that he blamed getting Alabama getting its butt handed to it by Utah in the Sugar Bowl on one player who wasn't playing.
But the one I think is funny is apparently they're playing against Spencer Clouseau trying to find out who was the one coach that didn't vote Tebow on the All SEC team.
Yeah,
he still got on it, but they're trying to find out who was that one coach. Probably one of the new ones that didn't know who Tim who.
Well, yeah, or you reckon maybe it was no. Well, the kid Kiffin couldn't have done it.
I don't think he's that stupid. You know what I mean? I'm figuring it's somebody. I still think it's. I thought it was Saban. Saban swears it wasn't him, but
not Rich. Maybe Rich. Up at Kentucky, Rich Brooks, is that his name?
Well, I'm thinking LSU maybe.
Could be.
Or it could be Georgia. And I hear your phone ringing, but let me let you go because you got a guest coming.
All right, take care.
All right, see you
later. Luke. Bye now. And I strongly suspect that this is in fact Mary Rickles on the line with us now, communications director for Netroots Nation. Is that you, Mary?
Hi, it is Mary.
I am so happy. I am so happy you had time for the phone call this evening. I trust you're well.
Of course.
Good.
How are you?
I'm getting so excited. I'm beginning to spontaneously vibrate. And I can't tell if it's me or or my cell phone half the time. You know, I answer my elbow thinking it's but it's just me. I'm excited.
We're excited too. We've got a couple of pretty big announcements we're going to be making in the next few days, and then we're just finishing up finalizing confirmations on all of our panels for Netroots Nation. So the agenda's coming together. We're getting really excited about it.
With good reason. How many panels are there going to be?
There's going to be 72 panels, 5 keynote sessions, and 20 training sessions.
Wow.
In 3 days. And then Sunday, the last day of the convention, is going to be a day of service. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you can get your fill of all the content and great organizing techniques and things like that, as well as lots of social events. And then Sunday, do a little good in the community.
And Pittsburgh's a great community to do a little good in. It's just it's a wonderful, friendly city. And I was really, really tickled a year ago when just after the event ended in Austin, wasn't it? And you announced that Pittsburgh was the coming up city. And great choice, great choice, great choice. What kind of I guess I can't talk you into just hinting at the big announcement coming up, can I?
Well, there are two or three keynote announcements that we'll be making in the next probably in the next 2 or 3 days. So one of them is coming out in the morning. So check out our website, which is netrootsnation.org, and you can find out what the announcement is.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to
go. Very interesting session. So
I'm going to go and look, and I'm really can't wait to see. What all? First of all, this is the be-all and end-all of get-togethers for the progressive liberal blogosphere, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's really, I think, the only session where you really get the spectrum of people in one place. I mean, we get, you know, people who are involved in campaigns. We get elected officials. We get, you know, bloggers, blog readers, activists, leaders of really great progressive organizations, people from labor, people from the environmental groups, even just regular people who are just passionate about politics. I mean, we've literally had attendees in age as young as 15 who've attended. And then last year, I believe there was a woman who was like, I think, 88 or 89. She was a grandmother, and her grandson showed her how to, you know, get online, and told her about Daily Coast, and she would, you know, read the blogs every day to find out what was going on, and she decided to come to the convention.
Well, that's wonderful. We may push that the lower end of the spectrum a little bit younger this year because there will be a 12-year-old there.
Oh wow! I don't think we even had anyone that young. That's great.
Well, my youngest daughter will be part and parcel of. Helping her old man run some of the audio out. So,
oh, nice.
And you know, that'll involve being in one of the rooms. So it's some of the goodness is bound to rub off on her.
Well, there's some sessions that Steve probably would be interested in too. There's a session on a couple of youth sessions about you know, getting involved in youth activism, and then we have a really great screening series too, where we're going to be showing. Some in part and some in full clips from different documentaries and progressive films.
And the theme this year, there is a focus this year, isn't there, Mary, on things green? I mean, that's part of the reason for the selection of the convention site. Is that correct?
It is. I mean, we decided last year that we really wanted to try to make Netroots Nation 2009 as green as possible. So when we were looking at cities, one thing that really struck us about Pittsburgh is that not only is the convention center there incredibly, incredibly environmentally friendly, but the city is as well. I mean, the hotel that we're connected to, you know, has all kinds of green components. The convention center, our vendors that we're working with for the exhibit hall, make it really easy to be, you know, environmentally friendly. So there's lots of things that we're doing on that end of the spectrum. We also really wanted to be able to use our platform to bring some attention to some of the environmental issues that that are important right now. So we've got a really fantastic track of panels on environmental issues. I think there's 8 panels that are specific to environmental issues. So we've got a really great panel that you actually helped organize, as you know, on mountaintop removal. We've got a panel on green jobs. We've got a panel on Pittsburgh as a green city and sort of highlighting some of the things that they're doing. We've got, you know, stuff on climate change. We've got one called Countdown to Copenhagen that's, you know, more about an environmental focus on environmental issues. Some really great stuff, I think.
That is so exciting. And suffice to say, do you expect to draw participants from all 50 states?
I think if we're not quite there, we'll be pretty darn close. I mean, we have a pretty broad range of people from, you know, just from looking at our registration system so far. And then, you know, we work with Democracy for America on a really robust scholarship program. We actually just announced our last round of winners, and we are bringing 40 scholarship recipients from across the country. And I know that we have some winners who are represented, who are, I think, the only person so far that we have in those states. So we're really excited about that, really excited about being able to bring, you know, 40 people from across the country who otherwise might not have had a chance to go.
Well, looking at that scholarship list, Mary, it was really exciting to me to see the number of folks who were taking scholarships coming from so-called red or pinkish states. It means that liberal progressive politics really is making headway in states that were supposedly right-wing strongholds. I know I've had some exchanges with Pam Poley from out in Kansas, and she's doing amazing work out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, we saw a lot of shift, not just at the polls, but we're seeing it in a lot of policy areas as well. I mean, we've all seen a lot of the poll numbers around healthcare when consistently polls on the public option are coming out saying that, you know, 70, 75, 80% of the American public wants to have the option of you know, public option, wants to have that choice. You know, that's pretty encouraging that there are, you know, progressive issues are becoming the mainstream. So I think, you know, in that respect, it's really encouraging, and we're really trying to make sure that our content reflects that. I mean, we've got, like I said, 72 panels. Really on every possible topic that you can imagine, everything from the environment to the economy. There's a panel on redistricting. There's even a panel for poll geeks that has Charlie Cook and Nate Silver and some other pollsters on it. You know, we've got a panel on turning red districts blue. We've got a panel with actually a keynote session with Governor Howard Dean. It's going to be a really interactive town hall-type session on health care.
Oh, that should be electric.
You know, that's going to be fantastic. You know, he's spoken at Narrates Nation before, but it's been more of a speech type thing. So we're really excited about this one, being able to really sit down with him and have a really great moderated discussion, be able to bring in, you know, audience questions and take questions in advance.
And this is what number, how many of these have been had so far, the Netroots Nation and prior to that Yearly Coast? Y'all are getting pretty good at this.
Fourth convention.
Yeah. Let's see. Yes. It was Austin, Chicago, and where was the first one?
It was in Las Vegas the first year.
That's right. That's right. I remember reading. I remember reading some of. Why has his name gone away from me? Wrote The Uprising. I remember reading some of his dispatches from there, and even then, I was sitting there going, "I want to be there." So I'm so excited that I finally am going to be there. And that the horn is going to be there. You're not all booked up yet, are you?
No, we are not. We have a really great crowd coming, but we do have some spots still available. Anyone who wants to attend can still register. Just go to netrootsnation.org, click on the register link. Tickets are only $275, but they're about to go up to $295. So, and then we also have some student tickets for those who are in undergrad or grad school. And that's only $50 for students. And who can't afford $50? It's pretty fantastic.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, absolutely. If you if people want to go, then they can absolutely still get tickets.
And there's even if there's have you set up an overflow hotel and all of that stuff as well, or?
Yeah, we have two hotels, actually. The Westin, which is our primary hotel, the one attached to the convention center, is already filled up. We have a second hotel, the Omni, which is just about 2.5 or 3 blocks away. And we still do have some rooms there, but they're going really, really quickly. At some point, we probably will have to get a third hotel, but that's fine. We've done that before.
And so you'll be updating there at netrootsnation.org constantly as you head in, as we get closer to the event. Is it safe to say that you think that all your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted now, and you're just about ready or are you going to have butterflies until the minute it happens?
We're going to be really busy, but we're confident that everything is coming together. I mean, we right now are in the process of just, you know, getting speaker bios and that sort of thing, you know, turned in so that we can get our program put together and get some of that, get the schedule, you know, finalized and that sort of thing. So just a really quick synopsis. Some of the panelists that you're going to be able to see, Jay Rosen, Darcy Berner, Rinku Sen, Chris Hayes, David Sirota, Brad Miller, Digby, Nate Silver, Lawrence Lessig, Governor Dean, Donna Edwards. Hundreds more. I can't think of the rest of
and then,
them.
Right, and then the big super secret announcements coming soon.
Yeah, so check in the morning.
Well, how did this begin? Because it's grown so fast over such a relatively short period of time. How did the momentum happen behind this, Mary?
Basically, 4 years ago, or a little over 4 years ago, some folks on Daily Coast. Had the idea of doing an in-person meetup, and we had some volunteers, Gina Cooper, who is on our board now and was our original executive director and founder. She helped organize the first one. It ended up being much more than anyone expected. The first year we had, you know, Mark Warner and Barbara Boxer and some really amazing people come out and speak. Had a great crowd of about 1,400 or 1,500. People and get some really fantastic media coverage that first year. The next year we were able to put together a presidential leadership forum that had 7 of the 8 presidential candidates, which is, I think, pretty fantastic for an organization that's only been around a year.
Oh, absolutely.
That year we were over 2,000 people, I think about 2,200. Last year we ended up getting a last-minute surprise appearance from Al Gore. We did a really great interactive session with Pelosi. And then last year was the first year that we had done the convention rebranded as NetReach Nation. It was originally called the Yearly Coast Convention, but we decided after year two that we wanted to make it a little more inclusive and make it reflect, you know, the audience that we had, which is certainly people from Daily Coast, but definitely our audience also includes people from, you know, other bloggers and not just bloggers, but people who are involved in the progressive community.
Well, you're out on the left coast now, and you're originally a deep souther like me. You've been to Pittsburgh. What's your take on the city?
You know, this is my first time to visit Pittsburgh. I just went about 2 months ago, and I was really impressed. People were really just lovely and friendly and, you know, just incredibly welcoming. We've got a fantastic host committee. We've got about 40-something people on our host committee who've been helping us do stuff on the ground and recruit volunteers. The city's really fantastic. It's beautiful, growing, you know, lots of great, you know, art and all kinds of great cultural stuff going on. So we're really, really excited, and I think that our attendees are too.
For very good reason. Well, Mary, I wish you the best. I can't wait to. I finally got to meet you back at America's Future Now the 1st of June in D.C. I can't wait to see you again in Pittsburgh, and I'll be awaiting those announcements. And the horn is just. So incredibly excited to be associated with this project. I look forward to an absolutely transformative experience, and I thank you for all the hard work that you've put into it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for helping. We're looking forward to working with you and seeing you in Pittsburgh, and I hope to see a lot of you guys on the air.
Well, I have a feeling we'll have a very full chat room, And I also have a feeling that I'm hoping that we'll see some actual horn listeners show up there for all the festivities and all the information, the education, and the general good camaraderie. And by the way, tell Raven that I said I hope he's feeling better. Looking forward to seeing him as well.
I sure will.
All right.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care, Mary.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Mary Rickle. She's the communications director for Netroots Nation. The website, of course, netrootsnation.org. Go on by and have a look for the have a look at the big coming announcements, keynote speakers, and the like. netrootsnation.org. And we are so looking forward to being there. You have no idea how exciting this is, because it's going to be a chance for the horn to really show what the future of progressive liberal broadcasting can be, especially utilizing this monumental miracle that is the series of tubes that is the internet. Let's see. Let me see if this person managed to stick around. Ah, darn. Hate to see that. But at any rate, here in the next hour, feel free to jingle in, share your thoughts. Do you live near Pittsburgh? Guy James is going to be there with us. I'm going to be there. I believe horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner is going to be there. And of course, the Von Kincaid family broadcasters will be there. It's a chance to teach the youngins how to, a little bit of the family business, I guess, is the best way to put it. And if they will have them, I will certainly shuffle Margie and Ferg and Doodle off to the youth organizing panels and the educational sessions. I think they'll get a big kick out of it. But anyway, your thoughts are welcome in the next hour on that topic and any other, of course. Where do you want to go? I mentioned a little bit ago in the course of talking with Luke, a guy named Rick Berman. Rick Berman being, of course, they call him a GOP super lobbyist. Well, the reason I mentioned Rick Berman, and this is what we're up against, and really energizing the liberal and progressive base is so much a part of what happens at Netroots Nation. We have to stay energized because of what is going on the other side, because the hate and the eliminationism just keeps getting ratcheted up. There was an editorial today in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette published an editorial that said the following. American public opinion came to the defense of the secret ballot when it was about to be junked. It needs to stay vigilant against these sly little provisions intended to achieve the same end. Have you noticed? Political parties supposedly dedicated to the workers' welfare have a way of undermining their rights. They may begin by bullying management, but wind up dictating to labor, too. Oh, somebody's been reading Ayn Rand. Somebody's been reading Atlas Shrugged. And everybody else. And this is the good part. For a European example to beware, note the sad history of the grandly named National Socialist German Workers' Party, a.k.a. Nazis. Yeah. I don't know how Gene Lyons manages to tolerate remaining in the employ of that paper. I'm surprised they haven't taken him out and shot him, frankly, because Gene Lyons is one of the best and deserves more attention than he gets, one of the best liberal progressive op-ed columnists in the country. And so that that hateful little screed was then picked up by the Workforce Fairness Institute. There's another one of those groups. Gosh, that sounds friendly. They just want workforce fairness. Oopsie. It's nothing but a front group for GOP hacks and flacks and right-wing thugs who despise people who work for a living. Their primary goal is to destroy the Employee Free Choice Act, another one of those things that Democrats are doing a damn fine job doing all by themselves. They posted a tweet giving approval to that rotten piece of op-ed writing that compares the Employee Free Choice Act to Nazism. Imagine that, a working person just being able to check a box on a card and join a union. That's Nazism to these weird right-wing thugs. Another tweet approving of the editorial was posted by by Workforce Fairness Institute, as well as the Center for Union Facts. That's the Rick Berman outfit. They both tweeted approvingly. Oh, by the way, the Workforce Fairness Institute, who do you suppose fronts that? Well, it's kind of hard to tell because being a right-wing organization, they prefer to operate in the shadows. But according to the National Journal, the greatest likelihood is that it is funded by Walmart and Home Depot and that ilk. Yeah, see, that's a workforce fairness issue, but only if you are Walmart, Target, Home Depot, that crowd. Because keeping workers on their knees is the best way to keep them from ever figuring out that they can stand on their own hind legs. Nazis. They equated the American labor movement with Nazis. So, just in the first hour, we've hit stories of Jim Inhofe saying that they are plotting Barack Obama's demise. And now we've got right-wing front groups calling organized labor Nazis. You know what's sad? The party that we gave power to is helping out. As I mentioned, and as the New York Times reported, the Democratic majority in the United States Senate has stripped the card check provision from the Employee Free Choice Act. And Democrats like Max Baucus are doing all that they can to stop any sort of meaningful health care reform from happening in this country. Not because it's bad for America, but because they perceive that it's bad for their bosses on Wall Street and corporate America in general. It's a little disturbing, isn't it? So we'll take a break. Green News Report is on the way with our buddies Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. After that, the second hour of the program and your phone calls. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. What's on your mind? This is Activist Radio. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 23, 2009.
Honey, I Shrunk the Fish. Offshore drilling versus California's budget. Clean coal versus reality. Plus,
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week. And you knew it. You knew it was dangerous. But you love swimming anyway.
Tourism versus safety.
You yell barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, this is your Green News Report.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Okay, I can't wait to get to the scary part. Is that first or is that last?
That's last.
You'll have to hang on. Desi Doyen, the green headline.
Fish are shrinking, according to a new study published in the Journal of the National Academy of Sciences, and scientists are blaming overfishing and global warming. Researchers found that the average body mass of individual species has dropped 50% over the last 30 years, with a drop of 60% in the average of all species.
50%?
Yes.
Drop over the last 30 years?
Yes. That's they were studying fish specifically in the North Sea, north of England, and they said that global warming, the warming of the ocean temperatures, is affecting the body mass of fish.
Wow, incredible.
The findings underscore several earlier studies that show many species of fish have changed their habitat ranges and breeding patterns as the ocean warms, and the decline in body mass, they say, has serious implications for the fish's fertility and for the food chain.
Holy cow.
California's budget woes have led to a deal for more offshore drilling. According to the LA Times, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger revived a plan that had been rejected by the State Lands Commission over a year ago, leading to allegations of opportunistically using the budget crisis to end the ban on offshore drilling instead of looking at other options like, for example, charging an extraction fee like other states do, which California does not.
Wait, so we charge no royalties for this offshore
drilling
at all?
We get some royalties, but apparently there's also an extraction fee that some states charge that California does not charge that would have brought in additional revenue estimated to be up to $1 billion a year.
But now, that would be new taxes on oil companies. We wouldn't want to do that.
If the deal does go through, it would be the first new drilling off the coast of California since 1969, when a massive oil spill off Santa Barbara galvanized the environmental movement in the United States. Now, we've heard plenty about the concept of clean coal recently, and now a new study from Harvard for the first time calculates the road to widespread use of clean coal technology. They say it will take billions in funding and is still many years away. Now, first, some background. There is no such thing as, quote, clean coal. Coal is a fossil fuel with toxic waste byproducts that come when it is burned. Clean coal is a really vague term that these days generally refers to the concept of carbon dioxide capture and sequestration, where carbon dioxide from coal burning is literally captured and buried underground. No one has yet figured out how to do that on a large economic scale. So this new study out of Harvard called The Realistic Costs of Carbon Capture examined the economics of developing carbon capture and sequestration technology, and they say that even with billions in funding, it is still 10 to 15 years away, and in the meantime would double electricity rates until the technology is mature. It's a fascinating study. People should check it out online so they can be fully informed about this idea. We have it all at greennews.bradblog.com.
So during the campaign last year when Barack Obama actually talked about being in favor of clean coal, and that was a clip that they used over and over again, the coal industry uses still in advertisements, it's all nonsense. It doesn't exist at this
time. It does not yet exist. Now, there are small, small facilities that have been able to use geologic formations to pump the carbon dioxide into them. But as yet, no one has figured out how to do it on a large scale that's not super expensive. One of the largest onion producers in the nation this week unveiled a new power source, onion juice. Gill Onions in Southern California supplies pre-cut onions to grocery stores and restaurants. And instead of disposing of their leftovers from the processing, the onion waste is dumped into an anaerobic digester in which microbes produce methane, which in turn generates electricity. Now, the company says this is a closed-loop cycle that will save them over $1 million a year on electricity and waste disposal bills.
That's cool. So they're doing it for their own plant. It's not something that's yet widespread, the use of these onions.
Other growers are looking at this as a way to save on electricity and to save on their waste disposal costs.
Very cool.
Environmental officials in the state of Missouri are in hot water after it was revealed that they withheld results showing elevated levels of dangerous E. coli bacteria at the very popular Lake of the Ozarks during the busy Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, see, this one hits me where I live. I grew up in Missouri. I grew up going out to the Lake of the Ozarks every summer, and this one really ticks me off. They found E. coli out there, but they didn't tell anyone?
They did not. In an interview with the Kansas City Star, the spokesperson for the Missouri Department of Natural Resources said, quote, business and tourism was a consideration. We didn't want to panic the people. Now, the report was withheld until after both the Memorial Day and July 4th holiday weekends, even after residents demanded to see the report. Now, the Missouri Attorney General is investigating because it violates the Missouri Sunshine Law, which means that once the public demands info, it must be released.
And so they knew about this before Memorial Day. They knew about it before 4th of July. This is a huge lake. For folks who don't know, a huge lake, a huge amount of tourism, boats, water skis, swimming, everything else out there. The fact that they knew about this, that they withheld this information because of the holidays, that's why we played the Jaws stuff at the beginning. That's exactly what happened in Jaws. Of course, in this case, it wasn't a shark in the water. It was something perhaps more reminiscent of a scene from Caddyshack, if you want to think about that one. But incredible that they did not let the people know about it. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Oh, and this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy. 14 minutes past the hour here, and a quick jump over to the mailbag. Come on, it's an email box. Who am I kidding? Somewhere along the way, I said something about what happened to American exceptionalism. Our buddy Marty has an answer. What happened to American exceptionalism? Americans are exceptional. Exceptionally greedy, stupid, and a few words I don't want to think of. A lot of them are. No getting around it. Talking about the possibility that the health care plan as proposed might not even begin to cover people until 2013. Our pal Cindy in the Great Northwest says, 2013? I have an idea for an amendment. How about an amendment saying insurers can't raise premiums and can't collect co-pays until after 2013? Wouldn't it be nice to see that kind of proactive legislating? Well, we get some of that kind of proactive legislating. God knows Dennis Kucinich is working his butt off, and probably, given the work involved, is probably doing the work of about eight mugwump dinos, as it stands. That's the bottom line for me. If it's good enough for a member of Congress, it is good enough for all Americans. And that's also what puts the lie to all this right-wing blather about how, well, Americans will be killed and they got higher mortality rate. See, but no, they don't have higher mortality rates in Canada. They have lower mortality rates in Canada. So, Senator Jim Inhofe, well, like you'd be surprised, he's just, what's the word I'm looking for here? Lying. Because he's a Republican. And Republicans lie. They lie like this. Like G. Gordon Liddy, who should still be in prison somewhere making little tiny rocks out of great big rocks. He threw a little bit more red meat to the birthers today. He showed up on Chris Matthews' program. And, you know, I don't do this to sensationalize these stories. I play you this audio because, like one of my favorite movie lines of all time, that line from John Sayles' Mate One, all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. I see and read and hear this stuff and scream. You know what you're up against. Know what is being done to radicalize and terrorize the other side. Because that's the only way that the right wing has of motivating its followers. Fear. 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 Are you afraid yet? Oh, here. Wait. There's a 6'7" Arab with a portable dialysis machine and he wants to eat you! Are you afraid yet? He wants to eat your mama and daddy, too. Not scared enough yet. He wants to eat your puppies and your kittens. That's all they got. Fear, fear, and more fear. If they weren't so damn dangerous, and they weren't so earnest in their desire to destroy what's left of this once great nation, the right wing would have already been reduced a little more. I know, Marty, I know. Don't compare them to Monty Python. But they would have been reduced a little more than the Monty Python skit about the Spanish Inquisition. So, here he is. Gold hustler, felon, America hater, and skinhead with a really bad porn mustache, G. Gordon Liddy.
Born here, and he's never going through a naturalization process, right? That you know of?
Not that I know of.
Therefore, he's here illegally. And you're saying he's an undocumented alien?
Illegal alien.
He's an illegal alien. So the president, so he should be picked up.
Well,
no, I'm serious. I mean, let's go all the way. And by the way, who do you think's in on this, Gordon? Do you think his wife's in on this? Do you think his mother's in on this? Who is in the? How many people are in on this conspiracy to make him look like he was born here? I figure his mother must be involved. His grandparents must be involved. How many people are part of this cover-up?
When his mother is dead, he would put out the birth certificate.
They've done it. Here it is.
No, it's a certificate of life.
Well, we have got
what?
A rule
what?
In that state. They don't.
Wait. Here's the birth certificate. No, that's not a birth certificate. That's a certificate of live birth. Jesus, that's what my birth certificate says. Am I Kenyan too, Gordon?
Handout copies of the birth certificate. They've got pictures of it. We'll show you over and over again here. Pictures of the actual original birth. Here they are. The birth certificate. What do you think? That was fabricated?
I can't really see it, but I would like to. I would like to see it.
Okay, we'll bring those in. We could bring in copies of the original. We have copies of the original photographed. But we've gone to a real effort here, Gordon, to establish that he was born in Hawaii. And I just think, and Stephen, I want to bring in Stephen because it seems to me the challenge Gordon has, because you've said he was born in the Kenyan slums. That means he's an illegal alien. That means he's not only illegally president, he's illegally in the United States and he ought to be picked up.
Unless he's been...
he's never been naturalized. He's never claimed to have gone through a process. So, by your account, he's illegally in the country. And his mother's involved in this, and everybody's ever dealt with him. His wife, do you think she knows, Michelle, that he was not born here?
Well, I can't look into Michelle.
No, but all these people say he was. Is she part of the cover-up, or was she lied to by him?
I have no idea.
Claim he was born in the Kenyan slums. You say that as a fact.
No, I'm a hospital in Mombasa. I didn't say Kenyan slum.
What's the difference? Chris.
I mean, where in which hospital in Mombasa? I mean, I've been over there so many times. Where is this? All this happened? You have a whole history of this fellow in Kenya. Do we have any evidence that ever happened?
Whatever happened?
That he was born in Kenya.
Yeah, I've got the deposition of the... step grandmother said she witnessed it.
I've got the deposition of a drunk guy drinking screw top wine under a bridge in Mombasa. My head hurts. This makes my head hurt. And then a couple of days ago, there was the Goonie who said that, I'm not sure. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the bird. Luke is right. This boils down to a case of pigmentation over documentation. Of course, G. Gordon Liddy is also the guy who refers to the Spanish language as illegal alien. This is a guy who gets on the air and claims that immigrants come from Mexico to the United States because, and this is a quote, they want to reconquer America. If you ain't white, you ain't right in Gordon Liddy's world. Lord knows, every time I hear Gordon Liddy speak, I'm grateful for the few little darker flecks on my skin that pass themselves as freckles. What a sick, twisted individual. And radicalizing the dangerous nut jobs that listen to him. Look, Jim Inhofe was not kidding. They are plotting Barack Obama's demise. He said it. And if he was anybody but a United States senator, if Mike Malloy or Tom Hartman had said during the long nightmare that was 8 years of George Bush, we are plotting George Bush's demise. Well, they'd probably both be pretty well along learning Arabic in one of those dog cages at our concentration camp in Guantanamo. But Liddy and the right wing can do anything they want by way of attempting to stir up violence and hate inside this country, and they go untouched. You know, it's sort of like the newspaper. I told you about that newspaper article in the Beckley paper, Beckley, West Virginia, yesterday, in which some headline writer characterized the resistance to mountaintop removal here in West Virginia as a fight. It ain't a fight. Our side is completely and totally nonviolent. But it would benefit the Beckley newspaper if they had something really nice and gory to sell papers about. In both instances, it is repulsive. It's sickening to watch the depths to which right-wing media are willing to sink. In order to gin up violence and hatred. And there's not a dime's worth of difference between ginning up that kind of hatred and the kind of hatred that was ginned up by those radio broadcasters and media elite in Rwanda. G. Gordon Liddy should already be standing in the dock at The Hague, and the civilized nations of the world should make sure that he never, ever, ever comes in contact with anything remotely resembling civilized society again. But he's a right-winger, and he's a Republican, and I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin.
You know what Fox, the movie channel, has been doing ever since Barack Obama won the White House?
No.
Showing Planet of the Apes at least once a week. You can either count on a TV show or one of the movies being shown.
You're kidding me.
I am dead serious.
Amazing.
Sometimes they even have the series marathon. It's like the subliminal stuff you need to look out for.
Well, it is, and it's, you know, it's that stuff about, Frago, the city councilman from out in California that we had the story of last week, who sent the emails around saying, Sarah Palin has received $1.5 million offer to pose nude for Playboy. Michelle Obama got the same offer from National Geographic.
Yeah.
God, Kevin, where does it end?
It doesn't. You know, it's like that old bitch from Delaware, you know. They just cannot, it's not a documentation, it's a melanin issue, pigmentation issue. Because John McCain was born in Panama. That is documented, off base.
Yeah, off base and not in the canal zone. And not in anything that would... No, you're right. It's documented. It's real. It's not subject to question. But we just overlooked it. We overlooked it the way, as Luke noted, that we overlooked Dick Cheney and George Bush coming from the same state. You know, yeah. Where was Dick Cheney's driver's license? Texas.
You know, but...
But they're white, so they get a pass.
Yeah. But I... You know, they keep on having ginning up this talk about, you know, Barack Obama and all that. I tell you, if that ever happens, some of the stuff they're the most will start definitely coming through.
But what? But if I can scarcely countenance the idea. We can't. No matter how not liberal he is. No matter how much more we want him to behave like what we wanted him wanted, what we thought we were electing, the minute that we start responding the bullet for bullet with the right wing, we're finished.
Well, maybe that's what it's going to have to take. Because I tell you, this time we're not, and I think Black America now is smart enough this time. Not to burn our own neighborhood.
I'm not going to touch that. But it was a manifestation of outrage.
It will be a manifest, you know, if it came down to that. And like I said, because they keep on throwing these subliminal messages to hang him, to kill him, and all that. If that. And I pray to God it doesn't happen. I really do.
Well, you know what? You know what Flush Flemball did today? I had to go down and pick up Margie down from camp, the Democratic Youth Leadership Academy. So I had the unfortunate displeasure of listening to some Flush Flembaugh. He was playing clips from Obama's speech last night, and he was playing them pitch corrected so that Obama sounded like he had just inhaled helium. I mean, even for Flush, I was sitting there going, no, come on, you're kidding, right?
No, he'll go there, and he will be on the list, too. I'll tell you that right now.
I don't know about a list.
Put it to this way. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there.
No, because remember, we'll get the visits.
Yeah. I don't want to go there, but... You know, I really don't want to go there. Yeah. But, you know, it's a saying that G. Gordon Liddy is around to walk the planet, free, living a comfortable millionaire's life in Northern Virginia, while the poor man who busted him, who did his civic and career, I guess, duty, he just did his duty as a human being, died on welfare.
I know.
You know, how's that for good old American justice?
Typical. Typical. That's how it is, Kevin. It's typical. Mm. Not surprising at all. And meanwhile, I don't know if you noticed this, but there's a law that says that when you're done being Vice President of the United States, you get 6 months of Secret Service protection. Now, the president gets it for life. But if you're vice president, you only get it for 6 months, and then you have to go and either get your own protection or find honest work or something like that. Well, Janet Napolitano and the Department of Homeland Security have just re-upped Dick Cheney's Secret Service protection.
Well, can you blame her? So many people want to take a shot at him.
Well, but that wasn't... That wasn't the reason given. They're afraid that Al-Qaeda's going to get him.
Well,
I'll tell you what, why don't we just give Dick Cheney lifetime protection and admit that he was really the president all along anyway?
Well, that's what I say.
But so you and me, we're on the hook for continuing a war criminal's Secret Service protection. How do you suppose those Secret Service agents would respond if, say, a U.S. Marshal with an arrest warrant or an FBI agent with an arrest warrant were to show up to serve it on Cheney? Is that right? Or if someone was to try to serve a deposition subpoena on him?
They can't.
Right, because the Secret Service will stop them.
I tell you, it must be great to be above the law.
So far above it that you can look down and can't see it from where you are. That's him.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like what our pal Benedict Large just said in the chat room. Let's give Dick Cheney lifetime protection in the federal penitentiary.
Oh, I say in the Hague.
I do too.
I say in the Hague. But I'm saying the hate. I don't think Dick Cheney's gonna end up like he won't be able to travel to a lot of countries.
Well, I wish they'd get on with it and make it impossible.
Because I don't think he can leave the United States.
I know you're not surprised at it. But at this point, you know, how do you respond to a Jim Inhofe saying we are plotting the demise of Barack Obama?
Like I said, you know, he's welcome to bring it on, but that nightmare scenario that Fox keeps on playing, Planet of the Apes, will happen. And like I said, this time around, we're not going to be burning our own neighborhood.
Is that me just being paranoid, Kevin? Or Freudian slips mean something, don't they? I mean, the people like Inhofe, they really, really are giving themselves away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Liddy with this business of born in a hospital in Mombasa. Mm-hmm. I mean, surely to goodness he knew he was going to be confronted by going on Chris Matthews, if for no other reason than the fact that Matthews had shown himself willing to confront on this issue with the congressman from California. Is Liddy so thoroughly self-deluded that he thinks he can look at documents and just say they're not real?
Liddy, something's wrong. I think he's on methamphetamine.
I think he's on Aricept.
Whatever he's on. You know, methamphetamine was a drug of choice for all Nazis. You know, let's go to kind of just address the issue why they're bringing up all this stuff, which is healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, okay, because if he gets this through, he has his second term.
If he gets it through. But what if he gets it through and it's no fix? Because I have no faith, Kevin, in any fix that involves mandatory purchase of coverage from a private for-profit insurer.
Okay, here's what's going to happen. If they don't bring this out in time, like before their recess, okay, he's going to give them, there's an old Jamaican saying, okay, we'll give you enough work to hang yourself, okay?
Say that again.
We'll give you enough rope to hang yourself.
Sure.
Okay? And this is what's going to happen. If they don't come back with something feasible by the end of recess, okay, he's going to pull out the nuclear option come around October, November, the single payer. And he's going to say, look, I tried.
I understand, but it has to go through the Senate and it has to go through the House. The Senate is the greater problem because Max Baucus ain't going to vote for no single payer health care. Ben Nelson from Nebraska ain't going to vote for no single payer health care. Mary Landrieu, same. David Pryor, same.
Okay.
Blanche Lincoln,
and
same.
And this is when you pull out, okay, fine, you don't vote, we don't help finance your reelection campaign. And that's where the Democratic headquarters come in. And I think he has his ally with the head of the Democratic Party, what's his name, from Vermont?
Oh, Howard Dean.
Yeah. And that's what they're all really afraid of. More than voting is not financing their campaign.
Well, you know, look at Michael Steele out there. He was on the Hannity's program last night, and he was almost like he was taunting. He said,
"Oh yeah."
Regarding the Senate, he said, "You got 60 votes in the Senate. You got almost a 2-to-1 majority in the House. The Democrats control the entire power structure of the federal government. If you want health care, get the votes. Do it."
Michael Steele's an ass. He's a self-hating ass, a self-loathing ass.
But then he went on and he said, I mean, Republicans can't block the bill. The Republicans can't even filibuster in the Senate. That is an out-and-out lie. We don't have 60 votes, Kevin. That's the problem. Because of the Ben Nelsons and the Mary Landrieus and the Blanche Lincolns and the David Pryors and the rest of that.
We don't need 60 votes. 50-something will get it. Okay, filibuster. Call the bus and filibuster your behind off.
And that would be possible were it not for the fact that the Senate majority, so-called, is led by Harry Reid.
Mr. Rogers.
Nah, Harry Reid makes Mr. Rogers look like a bar brawler.
I tell you, this is when we need a Lyndon Baines job.
Yeah, it is. We need somebody to pick up Ben Nelson by his ears.
Yeah, and that's where I think the linchpin should come. Get stick Howard Dean on some of these so-called blue dog Democrats and say, look, if you don't go along with me, you will not finance your campaign come.
Oh, well, by the way, the blue dog pack, you know, they've got their own pack.
Oh, yeah.
The blue dog pack this year, 54% of its financial rake-in this year has come from energy, financial services, and healthcare.
Oh, yeah. But they still need the blessing of the, okay, run as an independent, run as a Republican, but you won't have our party.
Well, once again, you know, we're finding out the pernicious effect of dirty, dirty money on our political process, and we're still not doing anything about it. We're acting like this is and I guess this is my greatest objection, Kevin. We're acting like this is a political problem. This isn't a political problem. This is a financial problem. And it's one of those makes me want to scream things. You know, there it is. Energy, financial services, and healthcare industries. Well, that explains how the Senate's responding to the ACES bill, which is a bit of a joke in the first place. It's more corporate welfare than it is any sort of a solution. That explains certainly the Wall Street bailout, and it also explains the healthcare debate. 54% of their money has come from those three sectors, and that's from the Center for Public Integrity. And they have the Blue Dogs have raised more in the first 6 months of 2009, and that is more than $1.1 million than it did the entire 2003-2004 fundraising cycle. What does that tell you? Corporate America isn't Republican. Corporate America isn't Democrat, Kevin. Corporate America is corporate.
It's corporate.
And they know that anybody will tell, it ain't red, it ain't blue, it's green. And anybody, Democrat or Republican, will gladly take it, with very few exceptions.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, what's so sad, it's built into the system. Even a millionaire like Rockefeller takes corporate money.
Sure he does.
When he can finance his own campaign out of his own pocket.
And never miss a penny of it.
Exactly. Especially in a state like West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
That's petty cash.
You know, when you look at the coal money he takes, when you look at... why do we sit around deluding ourselves into thinking that... and I'm not trying to be negative here, but why do we sit around deluding ourselves into thinking that we're going to get listened to when we can't match the money? Because the money's what talks. And I know that's kind of icky for me to even say, but it's, you know, mercy.
It's the truth. It's, you know, like I said, Canada every day is looking more and more appealing.
Yeah, but I thought you were headed south to the warmer climes of Jamaica.
Nah, can't.
You can't do it. I know.
Jamaica, you know, it's like I need stability. You know.
Yeah.
It's like Jamaica. It's strange how warmer climates there tends to be more political upheaval.
Yeah, that's been remarked on in the past on this show. The colder it is, the more people tend to try to get along with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we need in America is a good glacier.
Oh, yeah. A good ice sheet. But it's just amazing. If we had single payer, just expand Medicare for all, how many problems could be resolved? Because eventually it's good for corporate America, except for the health insurance. The only corporations that are going to be suffering is health insurance companies.
Well, did you watch the address last night?
Yeah.
What did you think when he just sort of said, well, you know, one answer would be single payer, and then went on like he hadn't even said it?
Well, I think that's where it comes on. I think that's where he's like, that's his ace. and it's going to be the atomic, like he said, like we all said, you know, when he plays poker, he plays long and hard. He thinks about every hand.
Well, I guess he gave up some ground today when he went to Cleveland for his town hall meeting.
Yeah.
Because he said if he can't get a health care bill or a health care vote before the August break, that, well, that's okay as long as we delay in order to get it right.
Exactly. And if they don't get it right and the Republicans plan on not getting it right, then that's when they drop the aid bomb of single payer.
And, well, and he was saying it because, again, the toughest man in the Senate, Harry Reid, said that the Senate will not vote on a health care reform bill until after the August recess.
You know, and then, and the thing is, I think, but the thing is, single payer, that comes out, even like the somewhat sane Republicans who are just opportunists will have to go along with it, like Snow from Maine and, you know, that bunch there.
Well, it drives me crazy because, you know, this is the request was coming via the Senate Finance Committee. Well, the Senate Health and Human Resources Committee has already reported out a bill, have they not? Why are we sitting around for this prophetized thing, this avarice-laden thing, to come from the desk of Max Baucus? It's hard.
And I think those are the Republicans that he's going to get over. Because I tell you, it's almost like he's setting it up for a win-win-win situation. Kind of like, what's her name, when he appointed the Supreme Court, where, yeah, it's going to be a rough, ugly fight, but eventually he's going to win, regardless of what the court is. And that's how he's setting this thing up.
Well, I also have to give credit to the House Black Caucus members because they say that there has to be something now. Among other things, they insist that health care reform plan is currently drafted. They say that it's affordable. Whatever. But they want it done. So it remained, you know, Jim Clyburn, who is not of the House Black Caucus, obviously, but he's the majority whip, Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, has said that, and this, you know, this is kind of respectable. He said that going on the August break without passing a bill would bring headlines of failure to act. And then he went so far as to say, and this is a quote, Kevin, it is much better to postpone, if not cancel vacation, our August break and stay here until we get this done. This is too important.
Well, that's what I hope they'll do.
The Senate adjourns, by the way,
yeah,
on August the 7th and goes on vacation for the rest of the month. All those millions of Americans with no health care, do they get to go on a vacation for the rest of the month of August while the Senate does and keep drawing their pay too?
Nope.
No. So, you know, this is not just me carping. This is a warning. And I mean, like I give warnings, but I sense that the American people are not willing to deal with the dithering anymore. This is not what the Democrats were sent into the majority to do. They weren't said that we didn't create a 60-vote Senate majority in order to watch Max Baucus play footsie with the Republicans on the Finance Committee. We just didn't, Kevin, did we?
No. Well, like I said, we need to basically strong-arm some of these blue-dog Democrats and say, look, don't even call yourself a Democrat if you ain't going to run as an independent next time. or a Republican. We don't need you.
Well, it's not a majority if it doesn't act like one, is it?
Huh?
It's not a majority if it doesn't act like one.
Yeah, exactly.
You're only a majority if you have the numbers in order to get what you have to get done.
And one thing about Lieberman, you can say he's a slime and an opportunist, but hey, I think he's on board with
it. Could be. You know, remember, the Senate Finance Committee keeps saying, well, you know, we need more time to act, we need more time to act, we need more time to act. I reiterate, the Senate Finance Committee version does not include a public option. And you know, what's his name? Orrin Hatch just walked out of the talks yesterday. So what is there to suggest that the Senate Finance Committee version is ever going to get done? I don't mind being you know, told that we need more time because we're working on it, but the stuff that needs working on isn't even there, and it's not gonna be in there. Max Baucus doesn't want it there. Max Baucus has, I mean, we know from the start of the program this evening, Max Baucus has been paid to keep it out. And it gives me no pleasure to goon on Democrats like this, Kevin.
No,
it really doesn't.
Well, you know, the first job of a senator is to get reelected.
Sadly, yes.
And like I said, we need to basically strong arm some of these blue dog Democrats like the Max Baucus and say, look, if you don't act come correct on this, don't even call yourself a Democrat when you run in 2010. Matter of fact, we'll put a candidate up against you and make sure he's well-funded.
Well, it's time. It's, I don't know. Maybe it's time just to give a gentle nudge. But you know, who's going to nudge Max Baucus? How much of a liberal progressive community is there in Montana?
You know, probably very little, but one thing about Montana, I think, honestly, as long as they have their guns, okay, they'll support the health care.
Yeah, because if it gets bad enough, they can always shoot themselves.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Well, you know, they want their health care, too, and they want it cheap and expensive. Think, you know, if you're a smart enough candidate, you think you'll have more money to buy it.
Yeah. Kevin, good hearing from you this evening, brother.
Okay, brother.
You take care.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk soon. Bye now.
All right.
From New York City, our buddy Kevin. This in via email from William. I saw Obama speaking about this seemingly hapless health care issue today. Not one mention of the billions wasted funding wars we cannot win, which would pay for health care. It just seems so ironic to me that the waste of war and the blood and death it causes to people who did nothing to us, and on the other hand, we listen to health care options that waver in the breeze like 100-year-old underwear on a clothesline trying to create wind power, all while the coal dust blows by. And what the hell was that last planned question about the fella breaking into his own home? How did that apply to the healthcare topic when, in fact, the billions spent on war was entirely left out? The question about single-payer healthcare just blew right by. I do feel so much better that Obama confirmed the one thing we already know, that he and the representative, he and the reps have the best health care on earth, yet no mention of considering changing that. And what are the health care options the reps shop for that meet their personal needs, as Obama mentioned? Ultimately, William says, none of it made much sense to me. Sad, but true. So here we find ourselves at the close of hour number two. And you are more than welcome to jump in with your thoughts. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And wow, does this seem like an appropriate way to end the second hour. A little bit of the drive-by truckers for you. Putting people on the moon. This is the horn.
Mary Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. We got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since. Every week down at the Ford plant, but now they're shutting down. Goddamn Reagan's in the White House, nobody gives a damn. Double digit unemployment, TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to running numbers for this man I used to know. And I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little bit. I ain't getting rich now, but I'm getting more than fine. It's tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I died in Calvary County, would it make the evening news? Would you be blowing rockets, putting people on the moon? Mary Alice, she quit asking, why do you?
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Right at the top of the hour. So we've got a solid hour of conversation radio in front of us on this Thursday night edition. A quick program note. The fam-damily and I, the whole fam-damily and I will be on the road next week. We're putting our feet on the street again. We're headed back to Washington, D.C. to do a little lobbying on behalf of the Clean Water Protection Act, H.R. 1310, and the Appalachian Restoration Act, S-696. So I'll be gone pretty much all week long. We'll leave early in the morning on Monday, and we will walk our feet sore from congressional office to congressional office to congressional office for the week and return on Friday. So I guess I'm reruns all next week. But Guy James will be back. So I'll be gone, but Guy will be here. We've got this kind of worked out nicely, strange as it may be. I'm looking forward to Guy being back. No, Lilo, sadly, I did not already pack my suitcase with money. I know, that money does the trick. But I played that Drive-By Truckers song from their album The Dirty South for a reason. Because, personally, if I had some way of reaching Democratic National Committee Chair, Tim Kaine, who took over after Howard Dean's term, I would send him an MP3 of the DBTs singing "Putting People on the Moon," and I'd also copy him in on the lyrics too. I love that song because it has, as only a lyricist like Patterson Hood can do, it has a time frame and a time scope . You'll notice it starts with Reagan, and Patterson writes what he knows, and he writes of what I well remember of what Northwest Alabama was like in the early 80s with the advent of Ronald Reagan. You couldn't buy a job. Second only to Detroit, Michigan, my area of Northwest Alabama where I grew up had the highest unemployment in the country. And during that time, beginning in the early 80s to the present, there has been a steady drumbeat from the right wing that government is the problem. Remember, it was that old Alzheimer's victim, Reagan, who said, "The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, 'I'm from the government and I'm here to help.'" So naturally, when something like Katrina comes along, and Lord, what'll it be, 4 years? Seems like forever. Next month. When something like Katrina comes along, they just throw their hands in the air. Brownie talks about how studly he looks in his shirts. And they say, "See, the government can't help you. That's, you know, we tore the government to pieces, and now the government can't help you, and that proves government can't work." And all across, you know, let's be clear on something. Lyndon Johnson was right. When he signed the Civil Rights Act, he said, "We have lost the solid South for a generation." And he proved perhaps more prophetic than what he knew, because all the old reconstructed racists just went from being Democrats to being Republicans. But something else happened in the South. That drumbeat of government is bad, government is bad, government is bad, tapped into something that still lies deep in the core of the Southern heart. And frankly, it goes all the way, it goes back to the days before the Civil War. Yeah, government is bad. Old multi-great-grandpappy told me about told the family about that when he marched back with the 44th Alabama from Gettysburg. And it has stayed alive from generation unto generation. And that's part of the problem, too. Maybe Tim Kaine needs to sit down. Maybe Barack Obama needs to sit down with a nice 1 liter bottle of Mr. John Daniel's finest Tennessee whiskey between them, with Patterson Hood, Mike Cooley and the gang, and let Mike and Patterson explain the South to Democratic leadership. What was that line? What was that line in that song about politicians? They're all lion sacks of, yeah. You'll notice there were no qualifiers on that statement. So as long as questions are asked, for instance, why does the South vote against its own best interest by voting Republican? Well, part of the reason is because the South has been taught to see no real difference except morality issues between Democrats and Republicans. So the next time you say, "Oh, stupid redneck," you just think of Max Baucus sitting there raking in the money hand over fist from the healthcare industry, calling himself a Democrat and doing everything he can to keep any kind of meaningful healthcare reform from happening in this country. You just think of that, and then you laugh about the stupid redneck again. And then look in the mirror and see who's dumber. The redneck who sees the reality, or us, who said, "Oh, change is coming," and then wonder why change never comes. My God, it's no mystery to me. And yeah, that's the other thing Lilo notes in the chat room. It has been more than a generation. And that's part of my thesis. It's been more than a generation that the Solid South has lost, that the Democratic Party has lost the Solid South. And the reason it's been more than a generation is because precisely of the way that the Democratic Party refuses to be the party that the South came to trust and love in Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Because you know what? There are places to this day in Florence, Alabama, where you can go and you can see a photograph of a railroad car down in East Florence, draped with bunting, at which a smiling FDR patrician, if there ever was a patrician in this country, a smiling FDR waves to crowds of hopeful Southerners who had come in their wagons, drawn by their mules, wearing their overalls, and the women in gingham. And those photographs represented real change, the days when real change came. and lifted that region up from being an area besieged and beset, among other things, by waves of annual yellow fever. When real hope came to the South, and it didn't just happen in Northwest Alabama, it happened all over the South. That's part of why Franklin Delano Roosevelt was reelected so many times. He was strong, and he demanded strong action from the majorities in the House and the Senate, because he fully understood that he was carrying the hopes and dreams of people who traveled miles by mule-drawn cart to see him. Do you remember the big deal that was made back in the 90s when Bill Clinton visited Africa and there were people who walked barefoot for days on end just to get a glimpse of the man because he was acting like Africa actually mattered? It wasn't anything new. It had happened on this very continent when a man whom Rockefellers and Fords called a traitor to his class arrived in the White House and declared that America would start trying to be America for all Americans. Yes, it predates the Civil Rights Movement. Yes, it does. But it also foreshadowed it. Because the Civil Rights Movement never could have happened had it not been for some of the stunningly insightful policies enacted during the FDR administrations. The Harlem Writers Project. That's not where John Updike got his start, let's put it that way. Southerners aren't disenchanted with the Democratic Party for no reason. Nor am I. You know, there's we have a lot of fun with wingnuts like Michelle Blackburn or Michelle Bachmann. Sorry, giving away. See, I just threw away the punchline. Michelle Bachmann. But she has competition when it comes to crazy in the House of Representatives, and her name is Marsha Blackburn. She's a Repiglican from Tennessee. Oh, really, Tennessee? I'll bet that seat once upon a time was held by a Democrat. Back when Democrats understood how to be Democrats. Back before the Democratic Party was taught, hey, we can have some of that corporate money, too. Yesterday, there was a debate in the House of Representatives on the rules for pay-as-you-go. You know, budgetary rules saying that we won't spend money that we don't have. And rising to the microphone was Marsha Blackburn. And she wanted to urge her fellow members of the House to have what she calls PAYGO enforcement. That she wants to be tough on the budget. Because she's a fiscal conservative.
Let's agree that we're going to have PAYGO enforcement, that we're not going to cry emergency every time we have a Katrina, every time we have a tsunami, every time we have a need for extra spending.
You go to hell. You go to hell, Marsha Blackburn. Did you hear that? Her definition of wasteful, needless government spending. What, is it the F-22 fighter plane? Nope, sorry. Is it the Osprey aircraft that can't seem to stay in the air long enough to be considered to be flying? No. Is it a wasteful federal program that hires outside contractors as translators in Afghanistan instead of the military training its own? No.
Let's agree that we're going to have PAYGO enforcement, that we're not going to cry emergency every time we have a Katrina.
Yeah. Katrina. Bodies floating face down in the fetid waters. Led into the lower ninth ward by levees that collapsed, that were only designed to withstand stresses that were far beneath the stresses to which they were subjected during Katrina itself. We're not going to cry emergency.
Every time we have a tsunami, every time we have a need for extra spending, that we don't go call for a special appropriation that allows us to circumvent the PAYGO rules.
Lord, if there is a hell. Now then again, Marsha Blackburn's idea of hell is letting her roots show. But didn't she write there? Yeah, that's worse than a little bit of gray peeking through the bottle blonde. She just let the absolute roots of her insensitivity, of her lack of concern, her lack of caring, her lack of even remote give a damn show through. And those roots have G-O-P written all over them. I don't know. Maybe we need to create an award. Maybe Marsha Blackburn needs to be a recipient of the first annual Barbara Pearl Clutching Bush Beautiful Mind Award. You remember Barbara Bush and the Beautiful Mind? Oh, no, I'm not going to watch the battle reports from Iraq. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to trouble my beautiful mind with who was killed and who was wounded? Why would I want to do that? We're not going to cry emergency every time we have a Katrina. Well, when would you cry emergency, Marsha?
Oh, over the little unborn babies.
Mm-mm-mm. Throw another log on the fire, Satan. One of these days, Marsha Blackburn going to come visit. Yeah, and as Nanette notes in the chat room, Marsha Blackburn also hates unions, referring to union members as jackbooted thugs. But that's just on a continuum that slides all the way to workforce fairness. That calls members of unions Nazis. Yeah, Nazis. What a bunch. Wonder how Marsha Blackburn would respond if her health insurance got canceled. Just saying. Yeah, she does kind of look... I love reading the chat room during the show. She does kind of look like a Fox Noise bimbo. No offense to the ladies in the audience. Let's go to the phones. Oh, you quit. Okay. No, I said something a little bit ago about Southerners having a profound respect for their history and remembering stories that were handed down to them, that were handed down to the generation before, by the generation before that, of when, you know, great-grandpa Cephas marched off to the Civil War. I was let in, I was given a little bit of information yesterday. I've seen it develop over the last few days. About something going on here in Appalachia. Appalachian folk, Southern folk, we do remember our dead. And we do visit cemeteries. And we do keep the weeds back on the old cemeteries. We like to. It is part of our duties as the living. So the story I have for you now is from James Creek, West Virginia. James, J-A-M-E-S, James Creek, West Virginia. You can read it for yourself over at climateground0.org. Civil War era cemetery under direct threat from Horizon Resources MTR site. Cemeteries in West Virginia are supposed to be protected from depredation, from destruction. West Virginia Code Section 3713A1, access of certain persons to cemeteries and graves located on private land. For the purposes set forth in Section 2 of this article, the state recognizes that the owners of private land on which a cemetery or graves are located have a duty to allow ingress and egress to the cemetery or graves by family members, close friends, and descendants of deceased persons buried there, by any cemetery plot owner, or by any person engaging in genealogy research who has given reasonable notice to the owner of record or to the occupant of the property or to both the owner and occupant. The access route may be designated by the landowner if no traditional access route is obviously visible by a view of the property. Seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it? Mining of any sort is not permitted within 100 feet of family cemeteries in West Virginia. At least not by law. This particular story concerns Danny Cook. Danny Cook knows who his great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was. Danny Cook's great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy was William Chapp. And off at a distance from two family cemeteries, William Chapp, in the words of the old song, lies asleep in the arms of the Lord. William Chapp was a veteran of the Civil War. Danny Cook's other ancestors are in two other nearby family cemeteries. Humbly and honorably, Danny Cook said, I enjoy going to these cemeteries monthly to take care of them and visit with my family. Well, recently he went to do what he does on a monthly basis in honor of the generations that went before him and made his existence possible. He went there and found access to the cemetery had been blocked by an outfit called Horizon Energy. Horizon Resources, LLC. Horizon Resources, I suppose, is rather ironically named because by knocking down and destroying the mountains, they're creating more horizon, I suppose. Or bringing the horizon into closer view. Yeah, they're a mountain removal outfit. And they have blocked access to those cemeteries. If you go to the Climate Ground Zero website, climateground0.org, the motto there, we all have a stake in the future, we all live at Climate Ground Zero. You will see a photo of one of six man-made berms that keep people off the road that leads to the three separate Cook family cemetery sites. William Chapman Cook, apparently, is the Civil War veteran. Not William Chap. You can't get there now. And soon, the bones of generations of that family will be shoved into a valley fill that was approved by the government of we, the people of the United States of America, and approved by the Department of Environmental Permitting of West Virginia, charged with looking out for the well-being of all the citizens of this state, and not just the well-being of coal companies. James Creek is in Boone County, West Virginia, just over the other side of Bolt Mountain. And coal companies do this knowingly. They do this carelessly. They do this with willful and wanton disregard for the law. And like all of mountain removal, they do it without regard for anything approaching or resembling common humanity. What's a berm, you ask? 2 feet wide, 4 feet deep, trenches dug down the slope on either side of the road so nobody can get through. You'll also see photographs of the mountain removal job taking place. At one point in time, Marvin White, he's a 57-year-old retired underground miner. He was a member of the UMWA. He told Antrim Caskey, "I worked 25 years at Eastern Associated Coal, but I am completely against this, what's going on here." He also said that over the last year or so, and you got to understand, there are places that internet still doesn't go in southern West Virginia, and a lot of people have scanners and listen to radio traffic. And Marvin White said that in the last year he heard mountain removers preparing a blast that they knew was going to go off near a cemetery. And as they bragged and gloated about the destruction they were about to create, they said on the radio, "Hey, what are those people down there going to think about that? Huh? They're going to be ghosts coming out of that ground." That is what these out-of-state corporations owned by international interests have done to the people who also have generations in the dirt around here. They have taught them disdain for their own heritage. They have taught them to hate their own people. By the way, for those of you wondering if I've got this right, William Chapman Chap Cook born 14 December 1840, served 3 years in the Civil War with the 1st Company of the West Virginia Cavalry. If they are West Virginia Cavalry, then that would probably, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm thinking they were Union forces. But that history is without value. Antrim writes, White told me how he knew these woods like the back of his land, back of his hand. He told me how there's a huge sludge pond at the head of Gerald's Branch near where he lives. Then he told me a story. He told me about some bear tracks he once saw, tracks that walked towards that sludge pond. He described the pond's edge to be about 4 feet of thick, gooey tar. You could see the bear tracks walking in. He didn't know any better. You could see his steps going deeper and deeper, and then you couldn't see anything at all. I looked everywhere, all around, for tell of that bear. I believe he sunk. That bear drowned in that coal pond. Heritage. He survived the Civil War. He survived what were probably some very harrowing events. He survived to tell the tale. But his mortal remains cannot survive West Virginia's worship of Holy Prophet. His mortal remains likely may not survive the drive to scratch out the last little bit of filthy coal from these Appalachian hills. And nor will 2 cemeteries worth of other forebears of the Cook family. Could this be done in New York? Could it be done in California? Would it be done in Alabama or Tennessee, where, as I said, that heritage still does at least mean something? I would almost dare say not. But if there's coal in the ground beside the bones, bones gonna lose. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
Hey. You know, Paul and I were at that hearing where the heroes climbed that drag line at Horizon at the Twilight Mine.
Right.
And the main mine superintendent took the stand, and he said they caught 3 of them at the wood line at the cemetery where they haven't clear cut yet. And I looked at Paul and I said, did he just say what I thought he said? He said he sure did. And if they clear cut it, they're going to mine it.
Dear God. So it's not like they just happened to not notice all this.
Oh, no. The mine superintendent got out. He was right up there. He testified. He was on the stand when he said it. We heard him. It's in the court transcripts. He said that 2 weeks ago, today.
You know, we have statutes on the books not only protecting access to cemeteries, but, Nanette, we have statutes on the books relating to grave desecration. Let's say a bunch of drunk high schoolers decide to, and you know this happens, let's go drink beer in the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And they get drunked up and they knock over some headstones. They get caught. They will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, and there will be tremendous outrage in the community.
We had that up here at Draughty. Paul and his brother, and my ex-son-in-law had to go fix the headstones of my uncle's graves where a bunch of kids went up in there and had fun.
But we, but you know, no, we won't buy, we won't prosecute a coal company for that, will we?
No, no. It just takes people to really be vigilant and watch their old family cemeteries and to make sure that they're not being destroyed, you know. I really don't think that they would have known until it was too late if that superintendent hadn't slipped up on the stand and said that. You know, it just, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I thought, he's actually saying this on the stand?
And just so folks will know, because, you know, obviously you and Paul live down that way, this is not an isolated incident.
No, it's not.
It's part and parcel of the ethnic cleansing that's going on in southern West Virginia, because once you have stolen a people's heritage,
mm-hmm.
part of their connection to the land goes with it.
That's exactly right. I think they're trying to erase every piece of us from this place. I truly do. Every remembrance that we have, every memory that we have of this place, they're wanting to totally erase it.
And the people doing it, I mean, are those folks who live around there too?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, Bob.
How could you make a joke on the radio about bringing ghosts up out of the ground?
Bob, I'm going to tell you something. This MTR crowd, they're a different breed of people. You saw that up at Marsh Fork.
Yes, indeed.
A lot of those guys that was up there, they didn't work up there at Gold's Coal. As we were coming down Coal River, there was a SUV dogging us. And Paul slowed, we recognized the vehicle by being parked along the road up there as we was walking back to the school. And we slowed down. When we hit a straight stretch, Paul speed up. That guy was so mad, you could tell that he was probably frothing at the mouth. But we weren't dumb enough to pull off here at the house when we got home. We went on down to Batona and pulled off down the old road down there. And when he passed, he had the Massey and all that, you know, MTR stuff on the back of his vehicle. But he had been paid to go up there, and he was late for his shift going back. We made sure he was late.
Yeah, because they wanted him up there, but by golly, you know, remember, work like you mean it.
But the thing of it is, they're not like the people who settled here. I don't know where these people come from. I don't know where their mindset come from. You know, one generation. You take Paul, my husband's generation, they were all staunch Union men. They cared about their communities. They cared about their neighbors. These people don't care about anything. I don't know what's wrong with them.
Well, they do care about one thing, Danette.
They're four-wheelers.
Well, they care about that payday. Because, you know, if you stop and you think about it, paying a man the kind of money that a mountain remover gets paid in light of what he's doing, you know, just operating heavy equipment, and I'm not denigrating that kind of work, but you have to pay him pretty big money. Just to drown out the screams of his conscience, don't you?
Bob, do they have a conscience?
That's a fair question.
I have come to the conclusion after witnessing this for years and being around them and watching their behavior, I don't think they do. Who's going to stand up, a 94-year-old man, like at, you know, Marilyn's opening down there at the Cultural Center, in the world, with any conscience or any respect at all, is going to stand there and boo a 94-year-old man who did more for minor safety than anybody else, which was Ken Hector, a heckler.
And yet, if a twinge of conscience does happen, Danette, and let's say one of these fellas walks up to the foreman or the superintendent and says, "What we're doing's wrong."
Mm-hmm.
What happens to him? He ain't got no union, right?
No. Mm-mm.
So he just get, well, if you think it's so wrong, you just go turn in your badge, and you don't need to be working here no more.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if the number's correct or not, but I heard recently there's only 1,000 union miners left in West Virginia.
Well, that would certainly be in line with Don Blankenship's goal, wouldn't it? And this is Horizon. What do they have any, what is their connection to Massey?
I don't know. That's the problem, Bob. There's so many of these mining operations that run under so many different names, but they have the same parent company. And you have to trace them down. You know, it's like that Twilight Mine. Had their drag line said Progress Energy. But then they said they're owned by Horizon. I don't know.
And it's all just phony baloney shell corporations to evade liability at the end of the day.
Well, one of the things I think it is they said each permit is judged on its own merit. They never did study the cumulative effects of all these permits that they're doing. So each one of these companies would apply for a permit under a different name, but they all fit together like a jigsaw puzzle. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it just, I don't know. But when I heard that man sit up there on that stand and say that, it just raised red flags all over the place. And I got on the email, and I put it on the email. You know, I said, you know, y'all better be watching this, because that cemetery won't be there if you don't.
And I mean, they really can just push. They can just push them over into the.
It's been done.
Into the valley, Phil.
I tell you what, Bob, I've got a tombstone on my back deck. Now, folks, don't think I'm morbid or crazy or anything. But my ex-son-in-law found that tombstone. And it was from my great-great-great-uncle's child. He was born in June of 1863. He died in September of 1863. And he had been found pushed over in a holler. And my son-in-law, and by the last name, it was my dad's last name, and it was found up around Montgomery, Golly Bridge area, because that's where Dad's people came, you know, first settled. And he brought it home. And it's on my back deck, and I don't know what to do with it.
Well, you don't have anywhere to put it back, do you?
No, I don't know where it came from. I don't know where the cemetery is. Now, the Golly Bridge Baptist Church has a book of births, weddings, and, they call it necrology. And that's where they kept records of the people that was born, married, and died. The child's name is in the Golly Bridge Baptist Church's book of necrology. But where the cemetery was, I don't know.
You know, maybe that's something we need to think about doing. And by we, I mean concerned people in Appalachia, because, again, not only is it not just happening there, it's happening all over southern West Virginia. It's also happening all over Appalachia.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to find, and this is just me brainstorming, Nanette. You know how I am. Maybe we need to find a piece of ground somewhere that is safe from the depredations of mountain removal. And maybe we need to make it sacred, hallow it, as it were, within the terms of various and sundry faiths. And maybe we need to make it a place where we can create a tomb of the unknowns. Just as in Washington, D.C., at the cemetery at Arlington, there is a tomb of unknown military.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what we need is a tomb for the unknowns to at least acknowledge the fact that that our dead, our beloved, the generations that made possible our own, to acknowledge the ones who have been pushed over into valley fills, who have been forgotten, who maybe have a headstone but nothing to go over anymore.
I'm going to cry, Bob. I never thought about something like that. That would be good.
And by God, I think we need to make Joe Manchin put it on the Capitol grounds. Unless Don Blankenship intends to blow up the Capitol building anytime soon. We can put it next to that war memorial, and we can put it next to that that statue of the coal miner. By Jove, I think we've got a half an idea going here, Nanette.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like up there where my grandparents are buried. They're just rocks for the head and the feet. There's no carving on them. The people, the generations always knew where Mom and Pop was, or Grandma and Grandpa, you know. But as the generations age, since the 1700s, people forget. I know where those graves are because the rocks are there for the head and the feet, and there's a sunken place where the wooden box they put them in, you know, deteriorated down. You know where the graves are, but you don't know who's in it. You know it's family, but you don't know their names.
Yep.
No, those are the kind of cemeteries. The last two in that row is my grandmother and grandfather, and they do have headstones. The rest of them is just rocks. But my grandfather passed away in 1940, you know. That's the newest grave up there. So the rest of them are much, much older.
I've wandered around a few cemeteries like that, Nanette. You've been to Anstead.
Oh, yeah.
Back of the town, there's a hillside there that has a cemetery called Westlake. Mm-hmm. And that's the cemetery where Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson's mother is buried. Julia Beckwith Neal was her name. But there are old graves of my family as well. And the ones that get you, they're little tiny headstones. And all the names are gone from them because wind and water and time have just worn them away.
Yeah.
And all that you can see that remains is a little carving of a lamb.
Bob, that tombstone that I have has a little lamb on it.
That's a child's grave.
Yeah, a baby. Was it 5 months? Yeah, 5 months old.
Yeah. So, you know, those are stark reminders of the hard lives that people lived around here.
Mm-hmm.
And children who never made it out of the cradle. And they, too, get pushed over into the valley fills because people like Don Blankenship haven't figured out yet that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses.
Oh, Lord, I don't know. It breaks my heart. I'll tell you what, that cemetery up there where my grandmother and grandfather are buried, there's a path that goes down to where they were, and it's so pretty up there. There's dogwoods up there, and it's in the springtime when they bloom. It is just beautiful up there. And, you know, the stones and everything. You can see what that old grave looked like in that picture from the Climate Ground Zero site.
Right.
You know, they look like that, but when you have the dogwoods in bloom and you go up there, it's simply beautiful.
And that's why those sites were chosen.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think about, you know, them just tearing it up. But what I was going to say, there's a path that went down to where my grandparents were, and there was a rock. And, of course, you know, it's rocky around here anyway. And there's real thick moss that grows there. And I kind of stumbled over that rock, and it peeled the moss off of it. And I got to looking at it, and there was carving on that rock. And I guess the moss, through all those years, had protected it. But it was his last name was Estep, and he died in 1852. That's all I could make out. I just carved on an old piece of sandstone.
Wow.
And didn't even know a grave was there, you know, and I put the moss back over the rock to help, you know, protect it, you know. But there's just graves all over these hills. They're everywhere.
Yeah, because death didn't used to be a business. It was a part of life.
Well, people buried their dead close to where they lived. You know, and it just, that's the way it was. Little communities had little cemeteries all over the place. They're not documented. They never thought they'd have to be documented.
What do you, What is it? Has anybody ever filed a lawsuit over that? I mean, you know, grave desecration is grave desecration.
The only person I know that would have probably ever had the gumption to do that would have been Larry Gibson, or would have known to do it, you know. I don't know. You know, they've been messing around with around his family cemetery for how long?
Well, and we know that they actually invaded it at one point as well.
Yes, they did, yeah. Probably some of the chatters remembered that episode. I was upset that day. I thought anybody would do that to a cemetery, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, you know, I just had to call in about that because that's really a subject that's really, really close to my heart. I keep an eyeball on ours like you wouldn't believe. But it just really bothers me.
Well, maybe we should talk about that little idea. You know, we know of enough places now. I mean, if I read things correctly, Nanette, we know of enough places now where cemeteries have been pushed over into Valley Fills. That maybe it's time that we memorialize the unknown.
Absolutely.
Just
and not just the Indian burials.
Oh yeah.
There's Indian mounds up here on Draughty Creek. And we tried to tell them when they was going in for the Lake Zaire permit, there's Indian burial sites on that mountain. Oh, there's not. They said contact the Department of Cultural and History over there. That's a joke. They don't care.
There's a federal law for that. I mean, there's a federal law now for repatriation of native remains. If you're an archaeologist and you are digging and you find a burial, you have to, by law, contact the nearest the tribe and return those remains for proper, reverent reinterment.
Mm-hmm. But we tried
but this is, but this
several
is,
years ago.
But, Nanette, this is a lawless land. I mean, that's what this boils down to. Appalachia is a lawless land. We are an outlaw region with outlaw out-of-state corporations calling the shots.
That's exactly it, with a complicit governor and a complicit legislature.
But when an elected representative actively turns a blind eye to the clear violation of the law, that person is no longer entitled to occupy the office. That is ground. Those are grounds for impeachment.
But who's going to do it?
Yeah, the same group that I begged to impeach Brent Benjamin.
Look, the tentacles of power reaches every elected office. I don't care how low it goes, but the tentacles of power, it reaches every one of them. I've come to the conclusion it don't matter who's on the ticket, who you vote for, your vote. It's either a coal crat or a coal colic, and I don't know what you call them, but they're all the same. There's no difference in them in this state.
Not a dime's worth. Nanette, have a wonderful evening. As good, have a wonderful evening, as good as you can.
Okay.
Yeah, well, we're about done. I so seldom hear from you on the phone. I hate to cut you off.
You know that I have to get worked up to call in.
Well, I know. But if this isn't worth getting worked up, I don't know what is.
I know it. It hits close to home. It's in my home county. As the crow flies, it's not very far from here, just a few miles.
Up Pond Fork, right?
Yeah. But whenever you cross these mountains, you cross four ridges over, you're over there. That's how close they are. If you travel the highways up and down the hollows and around all the curves, it takes a long time. But if you just go on the airwise, just a few minutes.
I would, you know what, I would give anything, Nanette, for an audio recording of that radio traffic.
Well, you know what? Who would have it?
Well, no, what it means is that, you know, one of the things that we need to start doing is, and I'll bet you, you know, I'll bet you a sharp guy like John Fox could probably figure out how to do it. We need to figure out some way to hook a scanner to a computer, to a recording program, and just roll tape on it.
Mm-hmm. That an idea, isn't it?
Because when people hear things like that, it becomes real.
Yeah. Well, just like if there's a picnic, that guy threatened to slit the child's throat. I just checked today, 43,000 views on that video that BJ took.
Yeah.
I want it to go global. I want everybody around the world to know what's going on in this corrupt cesspool of a place. It's horrible. Daddy always called the Capitol Gold Dome cesspool, and he was so right.
It is.
Our state capital.
And they've expanded, you know, and they've turned the mountains themselves into cesspools. That story about that bear tore me up.
I know it. I read that, and I said, oh, dear God.
Tracks go in, tracks don't come out.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Well, Bob, somebody's at my door, hon. I'm going to have to go.
All right, you take care and tell Paul we said goodnight.
Okay, sure will, hon.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Chat room regular, dear friend, member of this struggle against the rape of Appalachia, that's Nanette. And it's time to ring off for tonight. Thanks for joining in. I'm told that... The inimitable Brad Friedman is sitting in for Mike Malloy tonight. So make sure and tune in for that. This is, of course, as we always note, listener-supported activist radio. We sure could use some more support. We've had kind of a rainy July around here in these parts. But a few contributions would be like drops of rain on parched earth, as far as what we do here are concerned. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. And there is, of course, a snail mail address as well. And for those of you who have contributed and who do contribute, please accept our unending thanks. For those of you who can't, please know that we do understand. We live mighty close to brokering the Ten Commandments here ourselves. And, Lord, we know. I hate even having to do this kind of stuff. But it can't be avoided if you want this to keep happening. Because God knows we want to keep doing it. Among other things, start counting. How many other radio shows will you hear the story of the Cook Cemeteries on? Here's a hint. It begins and ends with one. And that's here. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Every stream you get, every podcast you download, happens because of the tireless efforts of Ben Birch. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. That's what they're up against, you know. This ceaseless assault on everything from our present to our future and even the dead and buried and hallowed past. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Shut up!
Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Thursday evening edition of Head On. I am Bob. Welcome to the Malloy listeners listening after Malloy's live show to this repeat broadcast. Welcome to the crew. Welcome to the gang in the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Welcome to those of you who listen via podcast, via the various and sundry streams that go out all around the globe. Welcome. I got a sensation we're going to have a busy night tonight. I mean, I could be crazy and everything. It wouldn't be the first time. But I think we're going to be busy. Why do I say that? Well, first of all, coming up in about, 28 minutes or so, I expect that we will be having a wonderful conversation with Mary Rickles. Mary is the communications director for Netroots Nation. And I think you will be amazed to hear what all has gone into preparing for this, the single largest gathering of the liberal progressive blogosphere of this year, as it is in any year. This year taking place in Pittsburgh, and it's quite exciting. A heck of a lineup going on. Netrootsnation.org is the web address if you want to go by and have a look. So that'll be coming your way in about 28 minutes or so. But I think we've solved a little mystery. This is how we'll get started. I think we have solved a little mystery. Those of us watching the glacial pace of the debate over health care reform in this country have wondered on this program, have wondered on blogs, have wondered in quiet conversations around the dinner table and in line at the grocery store while pumping gas or waiting to buy stamps at the post office, we have wondered, what's taking so darn long? I think we have the answer. At once upon a time, in the days of the oldie Roman Republic, so I was told, a public official convicted of accepting bribes would be thrown in a burlap sack with a wolf, have the top tied off, and he and the wolf would then be tossed in the Tiber. Now, we don't do that anymore. Frankly, you wouldn't want to pollute the Potomac any more than it already is by throwing a politician in it. I'm not so worried about the wolf. A little article out today from Roll Call, you know, the congressional newspaper, talking about the frustration that is being felt by a number of Democrats in the United States Senate at the sort of double-secret probation, thank you, sir, may I have another way that Finance Chairman Max Baucus, Democrat of, well, you know, you use the term loosely, of Montana, the way that he's dealing with health care reform. Now, I'm still baffled as to why the Finance Committee would have jurisdiction over the well-being of the people of the United States. I'm sure it could be explained one way or another. Anyway, the pace has been glacial as Senator Baucus played footsie with people like Charles Grassley of Iowa. And the Repiglicans on that committee. Glacial. I think that's a good... It, really slowly. And, you know, the way that he shut people advocating for single-payer health care, the real answer to the health care crisis in this country, the way he shut them just, no, you're not here. I can't see you. Where are you? No, there's no one here wanting single-payer. I think we have the answer. And we have it courtesy of Open Left, who did a little digging around, looking at the years from 2005 to now. And they found, well, you know, chercher l'argent. They found some money. Apparently, Max Baucus has been practically drowning in money. He's so surrounded by these humongous piles of cash that he can't move any. That's why he can't move any faster. The money is impeding his progress. When you got money stacked around you 15 feet high, it's kind of hard to wade through. What do I mean? Oh, let's look at Senator Baucus's top 10 donors and where they come from. Number 10, where's Paul Schaefer when you need him? Hell, where's Little Drummer Ferg when you need him? Number 10, DaVita, Inc. DaVita, Inc. Why, they're number 10 on the list, and they only gave Max Baucus $47,850. What's DaVita Incorporated's racket? Why, look, everybody, it's health care! Number 9, Goldman Sachs. They only gave Max Baucus a paltry $47,900. Now, we all know Goldman Sachs is in the financial services industry, right? But Goldman Sachs being in the financial services industry and being an investment bank and yada, 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 and they probably loan some money to some giant healthcare corporations along the way, wouldn't you guess? I mean, I'm just saying. Number 8, Aetna, Inc. They gave $51,250 to Senator Max Baucus between 2005 and the present. They are, of course, Aetna, Inc. in the health insurance business. Oh, and then number 7, some old friends of ours, a name you will easily recognize, American International Group. Most usually recognized by their initials, AIG. Between 2005 and the present, they gave...